Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to class time, to those who are here in the room, those who are watching on the live stream. It is February the 7th. We survived another successful Groundhog Day, whatever that was last week. I'm glad that's over, because I've never had a good taste for groundhog anyway. Next week will be the 14th. Tom will be teaching, and so he'll be covering why Valentine's Day is pretty much a fake holiday, and I'm sure y'all want to be here to hear that. I'm sure it'll be very informative. But for me, next week's about love, specifically the love of racing as they start the Daytona 500 and next Sunday. And so we don't want any long classes or assembly times for that event. I hope everyone's doing well. The year seems to be moving quite along. I've come to the belief that time is not linear. It seems to pick up speed as you age, but nonetheless, it's all good. So we are continuing on with what Tom started about 8 weeks ago, just before Christmas, and the idea of this returning to normalcy. So this is, I like teaching. I enjoy it very much. It's a pleasure. I feel the pleasure when I do. And so there are other opportunities. I would encourage you, obviously you're sitting here, so you're participating in class. If you're online, you're participating in class as well, and I would encourage you to continue to do so. But there are other opportunities, I think the ladies' class, women's class starts Tuesday this week. It is going to be done by email, of all things, kind of a different approach. If you have the opportunity to participate, I would encourage you to do so. I think you need to contact either Janice Greenleaf, or probably Janice Greenleaf will get it done, or Terry Apgar. Either one will do. So that's good if you can participate in that. Wednesday has a class on Zoom. I typically at his way on Wednesday night, but I made it last week or week before last. And, it's just good to see people's faces that you don't normally get to see, you don't often get to see, and good discussions and good study. So there are opportunities even in these, shall we say, unusual times. And I would encourage you, if you can, to find a way. You can study on your own. You can set up your own studies with your own groups. They don't have to be sanctioned. They don't have to be official. None of that stuff really has ever meant that much to me anyway. It's good to do. So if you have that opportunity, certainly seek out that opportunity. It's always a good time to do it. So that's my public service announcement. One more. For those who have a slight interest, if you have a couple of skills, you're willing to be up on time and not miss a time, you ought to consider looking at joining the AV team. I got here an hour early with them this morning as we moved stages and readjusted spotlights from hit by volleyballs and reset all my fonts to a size I could read in the light. It was a good morning. Especially if you're younger, or you don't have to be. You could be as old as Mr. Jim and the Nathan and them, right? You could do that, male or female. Good opportunity to help out, learn something, actually a skill that you can learn and contribute in any other way. You don't have to just sit here in front of this microphone to be able to contribute. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of the real contributions don't involve microphones, and they are real, and they are effective. So that is the end of my public service announcements. So we've been talking for the last few weeks about this idea of normalcy. And so you've heard it, you can hear it in the culture, you can hear it in discussions, we will return to normal. And when most people say that, they are talking pre-pandemic normal. And it's back to school and back to work, and stores are open, theaters are open, and on and on and on. Masks are going to be now reserved to people robbing banks as opposed to everyday people. And those sorts of things that we expect that will go back to normal. And then there are the lightened, wise many who say, no, we're going to establish a new normal, which means it's going to be all those same things except maybe you'll be ordering out more, you know? Maybe some people will not go back to physical offices, and it's my objective. And they've made it clear that they're really serious about doing that. I'm okay with that. So those are new normals, but it's really just the old normal, all right? And this idea is that these things are everyday things, right? What are the two things that are guaranteed in life, right? Death and taxes. But what I would tell you is that both death and taxes are abnormal. They were not intended. They were not meant to be. Our normal is considered abnormal. When Jesus said it would be considered foolishness to the Greeks and a stumbling block to the Jews. It means that we are out of step, even with an old normal or a new normal by the world standards. Our goal is not to return to pre-pandemic normal. Our goal is to return to what we were created to be and what Christ demonstrated with his life. And that is going to appear completely abnormal to the world. And so, that move? So our goal, like I said, is return, not to March. I call it March. That's kind of the mark in my mind. And the pandemic effects began to come to us, but it is to go back to way before that. So our passage is the same passage from last week. I've shortened it because I realized how long it was of a reading. But this is the same passage from the same John 17, this has got 9 through 11 up. It's going to be a couple more verses after that. So let's read it. John chapter 17, I pray for them. This is Jesus speaking. It's a prayer that he is actually uttering out loud in front of people. I am not praying for the world. That's interesting. But for those you have given me, for they are yours. All I have is yours, and all you have is mine, and glory has come to me through them. Them being the people standing around him, namely the 11. I will remain in the world no longer, but they are still in the world, and I am coming to you, Holy Father. Protect them by the power of your name, the name you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one. That's what we talked about last week, that oneness. While I was with them, I protected them and kept them safe by that name you gave me. None has been lost except the one doomed to destruction so that Scripture would be fulfilled. That's obviously Judas. I am coming to you now, but I say these things while I'm still in the world so that they may have the full measure of my joy within them. I have given them your word. And the world has hated them. For they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of it. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. For them I sanctify myself, that they too may be truly sanctified. I believe that's the end of it. At least the passage I'm going to read, the part I'm going to read. So we talked about this last week. And so I think repeating things is often a sign of memory loss, but it's also a good teaching mechanism. And let's just go with good teaching mechanism. And that is, so this scene is right after what we call the Lord's Supper. I mean right after. They've walked out of the room. They're moving along as a group. They are all there. The 11 of the disciples are there. Judas is already gone. He's already gone off to gather the Jewish guards, the Jewish leaders, and the Roman army, or Roman, not army, Roman forces, to come and capture and arrest Jesus. This is that moment. They still have probably crumbs on their clothes because they've just ate. It's that close. They walked out, and he's with them 11, and you know, it's been a crazy week. And so, by my reckoning, it is what we would call Wednesday evening, late in the evening, after 6 o'clock. Jews would call that Thursday morning, or Thursday. It is Wednesday. 4 days before, okay, Jesus entered Bethany right outside the city of Jerusalem and raised Lazarus from the dead. Okay. Does that say Messiah to you? And do you think it said Messiah to those 11? It said, this is the guy. Okay? If you're raising dead, you are something special. Okay? And so they've just been walking from Galilee for the last several weeks, and that large crowd has fallen. They're coming to Jerusalem with a crowd, and right before he enters the city, he raises Lazarus from the dead. And so that produces a small euphoria, okay? In fact, the next day, Sunday, which is 3 days before this prayer, he enters the city on a donkey with all the people coming out, throwing their coats and leaves and all this stuff in front of this colt, this donkey that he's riding on, celebrating him as the arriving king. So you understand that these 11 guys have hit probably an emotional high, right? They have to be stoked. And then on that same Sunday, he clears the temple, establishing his authority over the temple. So they're pumped. This is the moment they've all been waiting for. All their expectations are about to occur. There is little doubt that he is who we think he is. And there's little doubt that the vast majority of the city recognizes him as that, the Messiah coming king. War is about to begin. And they're excited because they believe they're on the winning side. And all that's going on, you know, right now, in their heads, okay? And he is saying some very odd things. Now, he's saying, Lord, protect them, right? Does that make sense? Would that make sense if you were one of the 11? Sure, you're getting ready to go into a war, right? So they caught that. I am coming to you. Not sure what that means, right? We'll sort it out later. You know, maybe it means I'm bringing my army to you. Maybe it's, I don't know. But you know that 30 years later, when they're sitting around a campfire talking, you know they remembered this moment, right? And you know they thought, wow, we weren't even close. Because he is about to, within 24 hours, Jesus will be dead. Okay? It's that soon. And between there and death is a lot of discomfort. The trial, the beatings, the struggling to carry the cross down into the valley, up the mountain. Never says all that part. After being beaten, then to be the nails dry, all that's about to occur. They're going to have the issue with Peter and the sword. Remember, they're still pumped to fight. And then Jesus shuts all that down, and they don't know anything to do but just run. Okay? So a couple days ago, they were ready to fight for all of its worth. They were excited, and now nothing. They lost. And they lost before the battle began. And in a few hours from this moment, Jesus is going to know that the 11 will abandon him, and he'll be tried and nailed to the cross. And he knows all that. But you know those 11 don't. So Jesus is spending his second to last prayer. He's got one more in the garden that's going to come. And I guess his conversations with God while on the cross, if you want to call that a prayer, I'll accept that as a prayer. But he is spending his last time looking out for the well-being of the 11, not himself. And so that's an intriguing moment in this prayer, that he is now focusing, and they don't know that this is his last conversation with them before he dies. You know, there will be some with Peter and James, and then he'll be resurrected, and there'll be a whole set of conversations. But this is the last one. And you know as well as I do that if you know your time is up and you're talking to people you care about, you're not talking about sports, right? You're talking about what matters, okay? And he has all his focus on them, not on himself. And they won't know this until later, but I'm sure they look back and think, wow, he told us all along and we missed it. And so in this prayer, he's going to focus on what matters. And the two things that he really focuses on, we talked one of them last week, unity, staying together, and then these multiple requests to protect them. So I'm going to back up if I can do this right. I want to show you a key piece of word. So Jesus is talking about protecting the 11. So what does he mean by protect? So he is asking them for God to look out of them. But you know what else Jesus knows? He knows that of those 11, 10 of them, and Judas will too, by the way, will die a violent death. Okay? And he knows that. So is his prayer unanswered? Or answered in the negative? Second, look at verse 14 there at the very top. I have given them your word, them being the 11, your word, which is the message, and the world has hated them. If I were to give you a gift and the world despised you as a result of you receiving that gift, did I do you a favor? Did I act to protect you? It seems to me he put them at risk. Okay? Didn't he? If everyone out there is going to hate you, and they're now in trouble, and in fact, they would all die, at least according to our traditions. The only one recorded in Scripture is James. The death of the only apostle recorded is James. And Judas. And James certainly died violently, being run through, which we assume means with a sword into the abdomen. So I think what he means here, I offer this for you to consider, that whatever Jesus is asking for protecting, that's not it. It's something else. Let's just look at it. Jesus asks, I call it a prayer of protection, but not of avoidance. So he does not going to leave the world. And so what it means is, you know, they are still in the world, and I'm not asking you to take them out of the world. That's what he says. I'm not asking you to take them out. Because if you would take them out, what would they not be subject to? Disease, decay, death, pain, suffering. Okay? I'm not asking you to take them away from all that. I'm just asking you to protect them. And so to me, protection, the best way of protection is not to get it. Okay? If I can avoid being hit, then I don't need to withstand the blow. And so this, whatever it is, but this is not, he's talking about, it is not about, it's going to keep us from harm. not physical harm. And so if you look at discipline, I'm going to read you the Hebrew passage. Discipline can, you can insert the word hardship for discipline here, okay? Because discipline and disciple, right, they're all the same word. To be a follower, you must have discipline. And in Hebrews chapter 12, endure hardship as discipline. Ooh. Maybe I didn't read that right. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. That's the passage I want to. And so we receive hardship informing us to make us hard to be able to withstand. And so you think about what we pray about. We often pray to not get into troubles. I'm having a medical procedure today. Don't let it be bad. Or, you know, that's what we ask for. And those prayers are not bad. They're not wrong. But that's what we ask for. We ask to not have the problems. We ask that our problems go away. And once again, those are not bad prayers. Jesus healed. He wanted problems to go away. But in this particular case, I don't think this is what he's asking us to be protected from. We're going to go through that. And we go through that at the time to make us stronger. So this is going to be a short class. I just realized how fast I'm moving. All right, I'm okay with that. I get paid by the job, not the time. I think we would rather avoid being hit in the head. Would you rather want to avoid being hit in the head, or would you rather be able to withstand the blow of being hit in the head? My thinking is don't get hit in the head. Okay? If I can avoid being hit, that is certainly the better alternative. So I remember reading, I read a lot of naval history in general. And the idea of a battleship, before they were antiquated by the aircraft carrier, was that they had two abilities. They could deliver a nasty blow and they could take a nasty blow. Their armor was very thick and it was actually on the deck as well. And so they had these large guns that could deliver violence and they could take violence. And so strength, in my mind, is not giving a blow, is withstanding a blow. So there are several kinds of blows. Do you get upset when certain things occur? I find that as I age, less than gracefully, as I age, things that would upset me 20, 30 years ago don't upset me now. So you've heard me, maybe you've heard me make comments about my hair. My grandmother told me that facial hair was a sign of low breeding. And to make sure I didn't misunderstand, she looked me right in the eye and said, "You need to get rid of that. You're not that way. This is beneath you." Well, I'm glad we didn't have any ambiguity there. Yeah. So, and she's the one that my parents said I took the most like after. So anyway, she's my blunt grandparent. And it was this, and my mother kind of felt that way too. Hair got long, didn't like it. Facial hair got long, didn't like it. Now she could care less. And it's not because I've worn her down. It's probably because it's not worth the fight. And whatever it upsets you, doesn't upset you now. And so that's a good thing. But if you think about anxiety, so we talk about this all in the context of something like someone punching you in the nose. But even you talk about things like anxiety, things upset people. Okay? Here's mine. I'll put it on when I come down off the stage. Really? A piece of cloth is worth that much energy? Negative for or against? Really? Have we become that weak? Have we become that weak? And so one of the passages I've read often, and I find it fascinating, I think the book of Ezekiel is fascinating to me, and this is, I can tell you what, just be glad you're not Ezekiel. First of all, be glad that God didn't call you to be a prophet, because I don't think it went well for any of them. And it's certainly not Ezekiel. So here's his calling. This is his job interview. Now, it's a one-way interview. Okay, it's not like there's some discussion and back and forth. God's explaining to Ezekiel what he wants him to do. And there's nothing about this job that says, sign me up. He then said to me, son of man, which, by the way, just for geeky people, Ezekiel's never called by the name Ezekiel by God. He's only called son of man. I don't know why, but I'm fine with it. I suggest you as well. Son of man, go now to the people of Israel and speak my words to them. This is his calling to be a prophet. You are not being sent to a people of obscure speech and strange language, even though he's in Babylon, but to the people of Israel. Not to many peoples of obscure speech and strange language whose words cannot understand. Surely, if I had sent you to them, the people who can't speak Hebrew, they would have listened to you. Uh-oh, I don't like where this is going, right? But the people of Israel are not willing to listen to you. Then why send me to speak, right? They're not willing to listen to you because they are not willing to listen to me. For all the Israelites are hardened and obstinate. But I will make you as unyielding and as hardened as they are. I will make your forehead like the hardest stone, harder than flint. Do not be afraid of them, which means be afraid. Do not be afraid of them or terrified by them, though they are a rebellious people. Does that sound encouraging? Hey, you're going to teach a fourth grade class. You don't have to bring your bulletproof vest if you don't want to. But here's one anyway. That doesn't sound good, does it? And so he is calling him, and he's saying, I'm sending you to speak to people who will not listen because they're stubborn. And you know what? Just to make you safe, I'm going to make your forehead like flint. So when you take a blow to the head, it's not going to kill you. It'll hurt like the Dickens, whatever Dickens is in Hebrew. Okay? And so he's making Ezekiel strong, not by avoiding problems, but having the courage to endure them. This is completely counter to our culture. Okay? Strength is being able to deliver a blow. But according to this, strength is being able to withstand. There is a reason that the expression, do not be afraid, shows up over and over and over in the Old and New Testaments. To Isaiah, to Joshua, the angels, you know, the ladies that went to open the tomb, or see the tomb. Do not be afraid. Why? Be afraid. All right? There's a reason to be afraid. And so, you don't tell someone, do not be afraid, when there's nothing to be afraid of. They're saying, you're going to fear. Do not yield to it. Okay? Which means there's something to be concerned about. there are threats to our well-being. Sometimes they're physical. So when Jesus is praying that to protect them, they were crucified, drawn and quartered, burned in oil, burned. I'm trying to think the other ones, how they died. I can't remember them all. All horrific, pulled apart. I remember one was pulled apart by four oxen, according to the traditions, hands and arms tied to four, sent in all different directions. How about that? Would you be afraid of something like that? If you say that's what's going to happen this afternoon? I think I'd be edgy. I think I'd be greasing down my wrists, just like hopefully the ropes will come off and I'll be spared. And so we live in a culture that doesn't want to suffer. And I don't think that we are seeking to suffer. But some pain comes across because we're human. Well, my faith is being challenged. I have a disease. You know what? Yes, it can challenge your faith. But you probably didn't get disease because of your faith. And so if these 11 men had not gone out to the world as apostles, they all would have died. And they died anyway. So it's not going to protect your life. It's not going to protect your body. But there is some that we do because the world thinks we're crazy. And that's different. Like I said, it's not a fact of nothing to be afraid of. I do not want to suggest to you that the pandemic's not real. I don't want to suggest to you the pandemic shouldn't address it. Be cautious. I wore a seatbelt over here today. I'm not afraid to drive. And so, yes, we all do things to be sensible. I have mine right here, my mask right here. I have worn it. And people say, I hate wearing it. Does any of us love it? I look at you all right now, and I'm nervous, just to be quite honest. I don't know. I can see your eyes, sort of, except for the glare of the lights here. And I can't tell what you're thinking. And if I could, maybe I don't want to hear it. But suffering and pain do not go away, and they are counter to the cultures. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And so, what we're going to be protected from is eternal protection, as long as we don't yield to the short-term problems. So I think I have it here. Yes, I'm going to try to set this up. This is my first attempt at something high-tech, which is about 1980s technology. Maybe 1990s. It said, don't we know that we are supermen and superwomen? So let me just tell you the story of Superman, capital S, Superman. So according to the story, Superman was born on some other planet. That planet blew up. His parents realized the planet was going to blow up. They put him in a spaceship and sent him to, of all places, Kansas. Okay? I guess it's nice there. He lands in Kansas. Now, he is not human. He's whatever this other group is. He is a baby. And apparently, our sun, the big yellow thing in the sky, our sun makes him, his body impenetrable. He can fly and see through things. That's awesome for a son. I don't know how you get that directed this way, but Superman's body cannot be penetrated, his skin. And he, for some reason, he goes around in leotards. I don't know why. And a cape, and he looks like an American flag. At least the 1950 Superman did. And maybe the Christopher Reeve movie Superman did, but now he kind of doesn't look much like a flag. But you looked like a flag back then. And his glasses kept you from identifying him. He helps be around dense people. So Superman, in this scene, it's a TV show, 1950s era Superman TV show. I want to show you a short clip. And let me set it up. There's a cabin. He enters through, apparently, the window. He crashes through the window. I don't know why he can't open the door. I guess it's just not cool. Someone comes up, punches him. He stands there and lets them punch him. And then he tosses them against a wall. And he turns to the bad guy, who always wear fedoras and suits in the cabins. And the bad guy has a revolver, and this is what proceeds. He unloads the weapon, and then he throws the empty gun at Superman. So, can you make that stop? I don't know how to make it stop. So, I don't know if you can see it. Right there, he's got the gun, and he throws it up against the wall. Ed was noticing there's a lot of smoke in that firearm. Must be black powder. He shoots all six rounds off Superman's chest. Superman stands there, if I might say, a little bit arrogantly, because he knows he can take it. He empties the gun, all six rounds, throws the gun, and then Superman ducks. I think I could withstand the gun hitting me in the face. You know, I would admit that if one were thrown at me, I'd probably would make some attempt to get out of the way. But why stand there when you're immortal? And by the way, the six rounds don't even tear his suit. So I don't know what that stuff's made of, but that stuff's worth having too. Okay? You would think that it would at least tear through his fabric, but whatever it is, apparently it's good stuff. I want a set. I would probably wear it under something because I don't think I want to walk around dressed like that. My mother's just now adjusting to my hair and beard. Okay? We are immortal, but sometimes we forget. Okay? And so, we have been promised to be protected for all things that really matter. We're not afraid of heaven, and we're not afraid of hell because we've been promised heaven. We're afraid of masks. We're afraid of what people say to us. We're afraid of what people think we think. That's the gun being thrown at us. Okay? It's not going to hurt. It may not be pleasant, but you can take it. And we, like Superman, we forget that we can take it. And we do our best to avoid it. And once again, I'm not encouraging to go out there and look for an injury. But I do say that in our minds, in our hearts, we have to be courageous and strong. And strong is not hitting someone. Strong is being able to be hit and not be changed. Jesus took nails and thorns and whips, and he never unloaded his fury on anyone. He prayed for their forgiveness. Jesus didn't duck. Because those nails, think like they're the bullets. Those nails are the gun, that gun being thrown. The real issue is your faith and your heart and your hope. And if you don't lose that, you can withstand the problem. You're going to have problems. We're going to have pains. So I think that's a fascinating, like I said, the character Superman was replaced by the actor George Reeve. And George Reeve knew that gun on his nose would hurt like the Dickens. Okay? We're something else. So this is my little phrase. I made this up. I've liked it. That's why I put it up here. Be courageous in heart, strong in action, gentle in thought and speech. That's what this prayer calls us to do. To be together, to not be afraid, to be strong, and to soften our language out of love, motivated by love. So that's all I have. I've been dying to incorporate a Superman clip, and I'm always looking for an opportunity to do something different. Anyone have a thought or question? You got 4 minutes by that big red clock back there. Yeah, so if you're out there, you want to text me something, you can text me. I'm not going to give my number. So I'm hearing nothing. Next week, why Valentine's is fake. Tom Reynolds, we'll see you then. I look forward to it. Daytona 500. I think there's a football game on today, but who cares about that? Thank you very much. We look forward to talking to you in a little bit.